Yeah. So it must be taken seriously, in other words. When the fruit of devotional service becomes ripe and falls down, the gardener tastes the fruit and thus takes advantage of the creeper and reaches the desired tree of the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. There the devotee serves the lotus feet of the Lord, which are compared to a wish-fulfilling tree. With great bliss he tastes the juice of the fruit of love and becomes eternally happy. To taste the fruit of devotional service at Goloka Vrindavan is the highest perfection of life. And in the presence of such perfection, the four material perfections, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, are very insignificant achievements. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.151-164. So that means when it becomes ripe, so devotional service naturally matures on its own. We make the endeavor, we try to please Krishna, and then this natural situation will arise, right? We discussed before, automatic means if you're doing the right thing in the right way, automatically the result comes, right? Not that automatic means I do nothing. So we're making the proper endeavor, then automatically this comes, but we see it comes on its own. It says when the fruit is ripe and it falls, at that time it picks up. You can't pick it prematurely, it'd be green, right? So it's a natural process. Then it says he serves the lotus feet of the Lord. That's what is the wish fulfilling. By that service, whatever you're looking for is gained. Right? Does that make sense? It's always a reciprocal thing. When you do something, what you're looking for is then received. So you render service, and that tasting of that love of Godhead, that's what you'll gain at that time. Right? So it's not something else. It's not something. It's, you can say it's mystical in that it's very special and not ordinary, but it's not, there's no mystique to it. It's very direct. You serve, you get the results. You don't serve, you don't get the results. Right? We're people, right? Krishna is a person. We interact, we taste the relationship. We don't interact, we don't taste it. You know, it's very straightforward like that. Does that make sense? So spiritual life is not this spiritual thing, you know, like that. Spiritual life is just the practical, natural position of the living entity to be in. This is what we're supposed to do. Not doing that is actually unnatural. There's a lot of unnatural people around, but that doesn't make it any more right. It just makes it, that's what goes on. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like there's so many people in the prison, right? And they're all behaving badly. It happens. But the actual natural thing in the prison is that someone is going to reform. That's what it's for. The prison was designed for reform. So that person who takes it up seriously, he benefits. He actually does. That's recognized. He moves forward. He gets facilities. He's actually happier. Right? Does that make sense? He gets out a little earlier. Does that make sense? You know? Like, you know, end of this lifetime is compared to being here eternally, right? You know, so it's a bit shorter. It's a better arrangement. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so now it's saying, now this position is the highest perfection of life. Right? To be situated in devotional service. Right? So to taste the fruit of love of Godhead, that's the highest perfection. So when we say just perfection, then that means to get yourself out of the material world. Right? When we use it. We don't mean material ability. We don't mean, you know, necessarily this platform. This we mean is higher than that. So we generally say the perfection of human life is like this. If we refer to it, it means that. But otherwise, perfection is the same as liberation. Right? Because for us, is things don't start getting real till you're situated on the transcendental platform, because that's the natural position. But here is that the highest perfection then is going beyond even that. Right? So therefore, all these lower ones then even, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, your religion, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. So perfection in those is very insignificant. I mean, insignificant achievements. So that's why it's said if they're connected to Krishna, they become useful. Because that developing love for Krishna, that's significant. So you connect something insignificant to something significant, it also becomes, you know, has some value. But to not connect it, then it's no big deal, you know? To be accepted by the karmis, to fit in, to feel you're just one of the crowd, like that. That's not a big achievement. To make some money, make a name for yourself, have a facility and a position, you know, to have some sense gratification, or to, you know, or even the gyan, to liberate themselves, or be very religious, nice guy, you know, give in charity, do so many nice things. All those things, they're nice, but unless they're connected to Krishna, they don't really have much meaning, because they'll all be temporary. Right? So nice for the eternal living entity is a result that's eternal. Right? You do something for Krishna, the result of that's eternal. That's nice. That you give something to Krishna. That's nice. Does that make sense? You do something, you engage your senses in Krishna's service, you follow the natural, state of your existence connected to Krishna, you know, as religion. That's nice. You free yourself from material attachment. That's nice, as long as it's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it's temporary. Right, we've done everything. I think Srila Prabhupada's mentioned we've been through all the 8,400,000 species of life. This is the real been there, done that, right? And so then the devotee decides this is not worthwhile. Right? So there must be something more, but we don't know anything else other than this, so we're bewildered. So if there's a sincerity in that, then Krishna, as it said before, previous pages, puts one in contact with the bona fide guru. That then, we are then are able to take up the devotional process. Then everything starts to become clear. Yes?
So connected to Krishna is by mood. Unless the mood is connected in the heart, then it's not connected.
Technically, yes. That's the best connection. It can be that you're doing the activity, you're completely, who knows where you're thinking of or what you're thinking about, and at the end the result then is given to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that also can work, but it will be lesser quality. Like you're cooking for Krishna, thinking of all kinds of other things, and as long as what you're thinking about isn't, you know, basically useless, then, you know, it'll be okay. Devotees will say it's nice prasad, but if you actually cook it thinking of Krishna without pride, then that will be special. Why? Because it's more pleasing, because then you're following the thing. Means if you're doing the activity with knowledge and detachment, you know, for Krishna, then that's nice. But he also brings out thinking of him rather than something else, and for him as a person. Right? So in the beginning, these other are put in. But as it goes through the Gita, then he starts to emphasize more and more the element of him as a person you have to involve.
So on a personal level, if there's awareness, like you said, if there's an awareness of an anatta, if it's not dealt with,
dealt with means you're dealing with it. Dealt with doesn't mean it's gone away. Right? No, dealt with means you're working with it. You're aware of it. You're actually trying to do something about it. You know, to the best of your ability. But at the same time, as there is that surrender to Krishna trying to make it. Because it's not us that's going to make it. Our part of the bargain is that we want to make it happen. Right?
So just by sincerity and endeavor and patience.
Yes, that'll work. But sincerity is still defined as the proper performance of your duty with the right attitude. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. Something else on this? No. Okay, so then Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues. Krishnas Kaviraj has described Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching in fitting verses with great expertise. If the jiva can understand the direct meaning of these verses, he will be immediately fortunate. If he understands these 18 verses, he will easily attain what cannot be obtained by studying piles of scriptures. Because the point is, as he's saying here, is that there's that mood. You want that to happen. You want this devotion. You're careful about the weeds, and you're focused on your goal, right? So you know what you're doing, right? You know the process. You know what you're trying to get to. Right? That makes sense. So the aspects of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan are complete. Right. Since time immemorial, the jivas are all wandering in the universe, following the path of karma or jnana. When the sukritis, which build up the propensity for bhakti, become strong, The jiva develops faith in bhakti. With faith, the devotee takes shelter of the lotus feet of sadhu and guru. According to instructions of the guru, he firmly sows in his heart this faith, which is in the form of a seed of the bhakti creeper. The jiva becomes the gardener and waters the bhakti with water in the form of hearing and chanting the name. The creeper grows bigger and bigger, pierces the universe, crosses over the viraja, the border of the spiritual world. And after traversing the impersonal Brahman, Brahmadham, enters the place of the Lord's pastimes. When the jiva pierces the universe, an incident takes place in the form of obtaining the mercy of Krishna. The jiva in his spiritual form is very insignificant. Moreover, while giving up matter, qualities get extinguished. The jiva then desires to annihilate his existence. At this crucial time, Krishna's own mercy assists the jiva through the special mercy of Krishna's devotees. What is this mercy? It is the Haladini Shakti emanating from the Chit Shakti, or spiritual energy of the Lord. It is extremely powerful. At the time of material cessation, the energy is eager to protect the jiva from annihilation of a spiritual individuality. It transforms sadhana bhakti into a more loving form. By the strength of this more intense form, the jiva attains rati and gradually begins to ascend. Without the mercy of the Haladini Shakti, the jiva cannot be qualified for the goal of prema. Equipped with the strength of the Haladini Shakti, the jiva pierces Brahmadham and attains the spiritual world. At the top of the spiritual world is Goloka Vrindavan. There, the creeper of bhakti spreads itself at the feet of Krishna's lotus feet and yields the fruits of prema. The gardener, still residing in the material world, continues watering the root of the creeper through hearing and chanting Krishna's name constantly. When the creeper sprouts and grows, the gardener must be careful. Sometimes the mad elephant of offenses against devotees in the form of violence, hatred, or criticism arises. It tears up the bhakti creeper and the leaves wither. Sometimes the mad elephant uproots the plant completely. The gardener must be very careful to ensure that this offense does not take place. Okay, so now, so far he's given these, going through these three things, is that it's a very special thing that the Sukriti increases. So it's not just I decided one day to take up devotional service. It's that the Sukriti is developed for so long, and then in the association of devotees, then it matures into faith, right? So we shouldn't be proud that, yes, I chose. That means then, means one thinks that one is independent and at any time one can take that up again. Yes?
Management criticism is a daily activity, because unless you criticize and help to improve and sometimes chastise and especially here even threaten, you might not get your results achieved. Mm-hmm. So then where do you draw the line between achieving your objective and committing a parah, even if the person is just a worker or a whatever, mm-hmm. a supplier or something. Mm-hmm. But you have to get your job done. But in the process, you might chastise, you might...
Basically, is that what you means the person is part of the field. So that's natural. If you're getting something done, let's say, like you're saying, they're a supplier. So you have yourself, you have your the situations in which you need things. You have them, which are able to supply those things needed. And you have your interaction in which you request things and they supply it. So all that is, essential to the field. So the problem comes as if some application of that or some misunderstanding of that is there. So then if you direct the problem to actually what is the problem and leave the personal, means the, how you say, personal insults out of it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the idea is you're not trying to, because they have not done something proper, you're not in some way trying to hurt them. Because that's where the offense comes in. That they've done something wrong, you point it out, you say it nicely, they're a little too, either they take it too lightly or they're too spaced out.
But depending on cultures, even just a suggestion, in what might be a suggestion in one place is an insult in another place.
Yes,
or
so vice that's
versa.
That's why one must
if
learn
you're in America
that.
And you say something very actually obnoxious, the person will think it's a compliment or it's something nice to say.
Yeah, but if you say something truth, then they'll think that you pierced them to the heart.
Yeah.
Truth meaning spiritual.
Yeah. So, I mean, what if that person is not a supplier but is actually a devotee who is somehow working under your care, or he's in your realm of influence, and it's much more subtle, it's much more sensitive,
yeah.
Because they might be doing the best according to their capacity or ability, but it's still good, might not be good enough for what has to be delivered.
Yeah. So then you have to educate them. That's why the knowledge is there. Because basically somebody does something wrong due to ignorance. So then if you educate them, then they can go farther. If you find you can't educate them, then they're probably not suited for the job. Then you have to find a job that their intelligence and their nature then can accommodate. You know, like let's say you thought that they could do more and you were giving them that opportunity. If they can't do it, then you don't even say that, well, I was giving you this great opportunity, you can't, because they can't take it anyway, so there's no use saying that. They'll only feel bad. Like that. So then you yourself from that understand, oh, you know, okay, don't engage them in that kind of activity. You know, in other words, you'll try to educate them. Now, the education may come through pleasantly talking, may come through being more strong, whatever is necessary, but that means you're getting the result. The teacher always should be dealing with the nature of the student, like that. So the student is trying their best to understand what is being said and apply it. The teacher at the same time is trying to find out the best way to say it. You know, and that having been said, then you can find, you know, slowly, then you become more expert at explaining it and, you know, how to deal and how to encourage and that. And those who have the nature to do that service, they'll get better at it also. And if they don't, then you get better at finding where somebody does fit and putting them there. That's the thing of the Brahmin Kshatriyas, very essential is they can understand these points, because then they can place things. Well, even anybody. Everybody has to do it. A Vaishya has to know, is this guy a salesperson, or, you know, he just cleans, or he does marketing, or, you know, like this. So they have to, means anyone who's going to have to do management has, the more they can understand personal nature and the situation, the better, the more efficient their management. You know, then it starts leaning towards leadership as opposed to just management. Because management, you're just operating the field efficiently to get something done. But leadership means that you're actually inspiring and creating the field and developing and cultivating the field. Then the field on its own actually does so much like that. So, yeah, does that make sense? So it's but all these things are gradual. It's not that it happens overnight. One has to become aware, you know, due to, like you're saying, the different social elements, they may be aware of certain things, or are due to ourself, we're unaware of certain things. So as we become aware when we apply it and it didn't work. So rather than think the other person's is something wrong, it's a matter of seeing, well, what went wrong. You know, it's like we were reading that Agastya Muni, when he went begging to the kings, and he asked them for a donation. So then they said, I'd like to give you a donation, but problem is my expenditure and my income are exactly the same. So you study it and see if there's some place where you can take something from, like that. So then being one, it mentioned that one who sees both sides equally. Then he looked at it and saw, no, there is no place you can take anything from. So in that way, then he left that king and went to another king, like that. So that kind of looking at is, okay, is this something, you know, is there something weak in how I'm understanding or with the other person's understanding? If it's myself, then okay, how do I have to educate myself to be able to deal with it? If it's the other person, how best to educate them? You know, so then it all becomes a training process. The Prabhupada's idea was the temples are educational institutions. You know, because they're actually training people in spiritual life and the personal development. Money is necessary, so therefore that aspect is there. Human life means dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. All four are there. But the main point, though, as Krishnadas Kaviraj points out from Lord Chaitanya, is the devotional service. That's the most prominent of all the human needs, human necessities. Right, so you can't get it overbalanced so one becomes more too prominent, you know, like that. It has to be a proper... Is that okay?
Yeah. When dealing with disappointments in life, one can adopt a philosophy of having less expectations, and in this way, less disappointment arises. But it tends to become impersonal or devoid of relationship.
That was what was mentioned up here. While giving up matter, qualities get extinguished. Because you're trying to reduce that this is not important because we're saguna. Now we're with material qualities. So in trying to get rid of those material qualities, then we might get rid of quality. You know, so it's like we have attachment. So therefore, in trying to get rid of material attachment, we get rid of the principle of attachment. But the ultimate goal is to become attached to Krishna. So attachment itself as a principle isn't the problem. It's when it's misdirected at the material energy rather than at Krishna. So then that is the problem. So it says that here, that in that you just try to get out of all the difficulty and everything like that. This is so much trouble, I'd just like it to all go away and just be peaceful. So even in a day-to-day thing, there's the element of the impersonal, you know, how you say, annihilation of our existence.
Same with emotions and desire.
Yeah, yeah. That's all, because they're all connected with guna, with quality. It means it's because there's a quality, then there will be a particular situations, there'll be particular, or let's say, no, because of the qualities, there'll be particular experiences in various situations. Right? Someone has one quality in the same situation, they'll get a different experience than someone else in the same situation because the qualities are different. So it all technically starts with qualities. That's why the emphasis is put on developing good qualities by the devotional process. When the impure things are removed from the heart by the devotional process, then it's replaced with good qualities. Otherwise, then, if we remove the bad qualities from the heart without the process of bhakti, then they may be nice qualities, but they're not necessarily favorable or advantageous for cultivating bhakti. Because they'll have been, in other words, what is generated from bhakti is useful in bhakti. What's not generated from bhakti doesn't have a use. Because otherwise we would have had to use karma or jnana to develop that quality, like that. So it has to be in relationship to devotion to Krishna. If those qualities are developed, those then are useful in devotional service. The other ones may be useful, may not be. You know, so that kind of detachment may also make us detach from dealing with devotees or getting involved in devotional service or, you know, taking any anxiety or risk for Krishna, like that. So that's what it talks about, is as that when the jiva, when it pierces the universe, there's this thing he's very small, he can get overwhelmed by this concept, you know, just being free. So then he says that then it's through Krishna's mercy, the Hladini Shakti, then she protects the jiva, right? So Hladini Shakti is considered that devotional element. So when that is there, then the living entity doesn't become bewildered by the impersonal concept, right? Is that? Because otherwise, the material world isn't really a nice place. Even if you follow everything very nicely, then you'll get the best situation that you can get. But the problem is you're nice, but it doesn't mean anybody else is. You know, they have the potential to be, they should be, but they're not. And because in the past we weren't, Therefore, we get the association of those not so nice people, because we were not nice before and gave our not nice association to others. Therefore, now that favor is returned. You know, so then it's just the way it is. But we will be disturbed the least. It will be the most, you know, if I say. Yeah, we won't become distracted. The point is that we reduce the material disturbance to that point that it's necessary that it doesn't distract us from devotional service. Right? Like ourselves, if we don't sleep, then we get distracted. But the Goswamis, they didn't sleep, it didn't bother them. You know, just it was not a necessary element for their focus in Krishna consciousness. You know, so it's not that they, you know, just mystically didn't need to sleep. They just forget about it or didn't worry about it. Like that. You know, but for us, it's important, so therefore we worry about it. We take it into consideration. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something else? No. Okay. Okay, so now, piercing the universe when it comes to the platform of Rati. So this means this is the Brahma Bhuta stage. Right? So that's Bhava Bhakti. So there it's a more intense form. Yeah, more loving form. So Bhava is more loving because you're just dealing more with the experience that is gained. That becomes the prominent thing. So in describing Bhava Sadhana and the aspects of Rasa, then we see that it's more in relationship to the mood that is there, what is gained, not so much the activity. The sthayi bhava is the rasa you have, so what service you do with Krishna, right? Then how you're attracted to Krishna, the vibhava, the experiences gained from interacting, the anubhava, then the physical reactions that come, the sattvika bhavas, and the emotional reactions that come, you know, that have physical effect, and the sanchari bhavas. So the emphasis is on the experience rather than on the effectiveness, right? You know, in the material world, you know, Arjuna, you know, he's can shoot his, you know, bow with both hands. He's the, you know, annihilator of enemies. He's the winner of wealth. He's, you know, we talk more on that line because here it's more the activity and it gets a certain result. But the activity is there, it gets that result because there's no obstacles, really. You know, as such, they're created by yoga maya just to increase rasa, but there isn't any obstacles, technically. So then, the efficiency of getting things done, the expertise, you know, then works very nicely. So the emphasis is not on getting something done, but on the mood that is gained. Right? That's always, you can be appreciated. Because we see, getting something done efficiently, after a while, that gets boring. Right? So the experience goes down. So it's not the thing that's important, it's that what's important is the experience. Right? We take it that getting something done is what's important. No, the experience from getting it done is what's important. So in the spiritual world, the emphasis is on that experience. So that's what bhava is. Right? And then that matures into prema. So then the experience just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Does this make any sense? Yes? No? Yeah? Okay, so therefore then the living entity by the grace of Ladini Shakti is able to get through that, right? Because we discussed before is that we're using many times this Brahman understanding, Paramatma understanding to free ourselves from material attachment. But still, it's only by the grace of the Ladini Shakti that we get beyond that. We don't get attached to that or become distracted by that. We actually come to the platform of wanting to have that loving exchange with Krishna as opposed to just the efficiency of getting detached from the material existence. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Then when the creeper spreads, so that's one thing, it's not getting distracted by the use of karma and jnana in Krishna's service. Right, so the Hladini Shakti will help that. Because the karma, once it's being done without attachment, naturally turns into jnana automatically. But to be able to get freed from that so that we don't annihilate our existence, that is by the grace of the internal potency. Then the next thing to watch out for, when the creeper sprouts and grows, the gardener must be careful. Sometimes the mad elephant of offenses against devotees in the form of violence, hatred, or criticism arises. It tears up the bhakti creeper and the leaves wither. Sometimes the mad elephant uproots the plant completely. The gardener must be very careful to ensure that this offense does not take place. So here is that he's saying that it tears up the bhakti creeper and the leaves wither. So that means it's been disturbed to the point where it's not, you know, one is not tasting, or the one is not getting that taste in devotional service. But it says that one has to be careful. Sometimes it's so serious that it just rips the plant out of the ground completely. Right? Then you see someone just stops devotional service, gives it up, has no interest in anything. But if it's just a matter of it drops and they become distracted, they become disturbed, more materially oriented, like that, these kind of things, more miserable, these kind of things then means that the offense, this mad elephant offense, means it's offense against devotees, but it is less major, let's say, like that. So it's still something that can be worked with at this point, because once the other comes, then it's a whole process of, again, becoming basically not very much interested in the material energy, because it's been gone in that direction with such enthusiasm. Generally one gets distracted in that way for some time. So it's not a good, one has to be very careful. Okay, so this is the second one. One is becoming distracted by jnana, the other is becoming distracted by offenses to devotees. So here it must be violence, hatred, or criticism. Right, so that thing must be, we must work on that, yes.
How do you tell the difference between, it's like the devotion of people can diminish the offences, but then there's like when Maya is, you get distracted by the material energy. So
but why would that come?
Oh, by offences.
Yeah. In other words, one's already distracted and one makes advancement, but for it to go back to some place where it was, then that generally means offences. You know what I'm saying? It's another thing that, but this also then, this is not being discussed here, it's discussed in another place where you're dealing with the details of chanting. The Prabhupada mentions that you have a pond that looks very clean, nice clean water, but nothing's happening. But as soon as you go to clean the pond, because the bottom is full of dirt, then the water becomes murky. So in the chanting process, then all these desires that have become kind of latent or hidden then come up. Because you're purifying, so that means they're going to come up. You go into a closet to clean, that means things you haven't noticed or seen for years come out. Right? And as long as you're not seeing them, you don't think about them, which is good. But as soon as you drag them out, then all kinds of interest and desire comes up. So that's the point, is that's just the process of cleaning. So when it comes up, then you think, no, then it goes. But if you think, wow, that's nice, or then it goes back in, right? You don't throw anything out of the closet that you think is important. It goes back in. Does that make sense? So that's different from here. But to get that strength, so that inability to see the difference, that might come from offenses, or it might just come from lack of maturity. Like that, or lack of determination, or that. But that point that you are able to make those distinctions and just let those things go, then is good. And one has to consistently do that. Because the idea is all those things, all that dirt, all those funny things in the closet, those were something that were at one time important to you. Otherwise, why are they in your closet? You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be checked quite a few times, because it's a voluntary process. Do you actually want to get rid of it? Right? So it's not just you cover your eyes and it goes away. It's a matter of they're going to come up to you because it is valuable. Are you sure you don't want this? Right? Does that make sense? The other obstacle may appear. Well, no, one other obstacle may appear, right? So now this is the third of them. Along with the creeper of bhakti, weeds may also spring up. They grow along with the watering process of hearing and chanting, and smother the creeper of bhakti. Many types of weeds may grow up: material enjoyment, desire for liberation, desire for mystic powers, desire of women, sinful action, absorption of the mind in forbidden things, violence to other living entities, cruelty, cheating, longing for position, greed for money, or material piety. The gardener must be careful to cut down these weeds as they begin to grow. In this way, the creeper can surpass the material world and attain the spiritual world of Vrindavan. The fruit of prema ripens and falls, and the gardener relishes it in great bliss. Prema is the ultimate goal of the jiva. Compared to this, dharma, artakama, and moksha are nothing. Okay, then we go on to prema. So here, the kinds of weeds, material enjoyment. Okay, desire of, okay. So is that this? So material enjoyment means is that that's the focus, that the enjoyment is your purpose, rather than its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Because the senses are engaged, that means there's going to be sense gratification. So it's a matter of, are the senses engaged according to Krishna's direction? If they are, then it's not so much of a problem. You understand? So this just means that the sense gratification is valuable. Desire of liberation. You just want to get out of the material world, but why get out of the material world? What are you going to do out there? You know what I'm saying? It's pretty boring. There's nothing going on. So just to get out of the material world isn't enough. But that attachment to that, then one might not be thinking about you actually want to serve Krishna. Because it's more important to you to have no material pains than to interact with Krishna. Does that make sense? Because if we're not willing to deal with emotions at all, why would we want to deal with emotions in connection to Krishna? Because also, if you're with Krishna, it's nice. You're not with Krishna, then it's feeling it's not nice. Though it's still, because it's about Krishna, then it's always nice. But it's still emotions. Emotions are changing. Emotions are happening. So the problem is not the overwhelming with emotion or overwhelming with so many activities or different things. The point is that it's for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that desire for liberation can get in the way. Mystic powers, that, you know, something special you can do in that. And so it means your uniqueness in your ability and all that. So that becomes prominent, then that's not so good. It's just whatever your conditioned nature, you use that to its best for Krishna. But it's not that you're striving that makes you your position, that gives you your identity, that gives you who you are. That's not so important. You know, like we see that example, they were all in the airport. And so many devotees were there, and so the airport officials wanted the devotees to shift to another place because they were kind of like blocking the way. So then one of the devotees then stood up on, you know, a table there and announced that all the devotees should get up and move over here. So Prabhupada immediately got up to move over there. You know, and he was saying, no, not you, Srila Prabhupada, it's everybody else. But he just identifies as devotee. He's not thinking, yes, I'm the founder of Acharya, I'm this, I'm that, I'm so. He just says, I think I'm a devotee. Like that. His service is then doing those activities. Right? So that's what he does. Right? Someone else washes pots, he writes books. You know, so that's what he... Does that make sense? Okay. Then, desire of women. So that means, it would mean the whole basic gamut of the material existence. Whatever can be gained in that is going to be found through women, because that's where all the opulence is. Right? You just have a bunch of brahmacharis, not much happening. Right? So the material facility, the material need, whatever is there, even if it's of inferior quality, is somehow or another good enough. Right? But as soon as you add women to it, then the refinement, development of the material facilities and experiences must improve, right? They can't stay the way they are, right? It means energy has to be moving. It's either moving one way or the other. There's no such thing as energy doesn't move, right? So therefore, there must be development. So when one gets involved with this, then there'll be so many things, then that really increases that I'm the controller, enjoyer of the material energy. So it's a very central aspect. Sinful action, that one wants a more intense experience that's not gained by, or you can't see that it can be gained by, righteous activity. So therefore, you know, it's like stealing. You could go get a job, get the money, buy the thing, but you think that that's too much trouble, so I will just steal it. So sinful action just means I'm taking things I don't deserve, like that. Absorption of the mind in forbidden things, then things that aren't for you. They may be bona fide, they may be for someone else, or even if they're not bona fide, but they're not for you. But absorption of your mind in that, then that becomes a big problem, right? So in other words, something that is your duty, that's what you should be absorbed in. Something that's someone else's duty, that shouldn't be your absorption, right? Does that make sense? Because it's already mentioned sinful action, so this forbidden things doesn't necessitate it's sinful. Right? It means that it's like that. Or it can mean either sinful action, or this one could mean absorption of the mind in desiring of sinful action, like that. But in any case, sinful means it's not what's not supposed to be done. Pious means what should be done. So for us, sinful is, you know, what is not connected to Krishna. Pious is what is. So what are not connected to Krishna, like that, even if it's something nice, absorption in that is not so good, right? And definitely if it's, you know, not very useful in devotional service, that's even less, and that's even more of a problem of being absorbed. Like that, violence to other living entities, is that this comes from that envy, which comes from the desire to control or to be God. So just when that frustration is more, or your identity that I am more the controller, tends to be more rough with other, because if I'm the controller, I don't have to worry. But the point is, if I'm servant, then I have to worry, right? If I'm a servant, I have to worry about pleasing others. If I'm the Lord, I don't have to, at least in our idea, right? So this violence then is a natural outcome of that. We think we're in a special position, therefore we're rough with others. We're, you know, either physically violent, emotionally violent, you know, verbally violent. All these different aspects come up because of this, our thinking we're in a special position. It comes from fear, right? Because fear then is reflecting on one's identity. You identify that I'm something special, then anything that can cause a disturbance to that specialness, one is afraid of that. So one generally tends to be violent towards that. Does that make sense? Right? But the point is if we see ourselves as servant of Krishna, then this violence doesn't come up because there's no fear. Right? Whatever my position, it can be big, small, but it's as a service to Krishna. So it's not me. I'm servant of Krishna. I happen to be, you know, emperor of the world, like Yudhishthira Maharaj or Ambarish Maharaj, or I happen to be the pot washer. But it's by Krishna's grace. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. We'll get into this, I think it's what, the 8th and 9th verse of Ishvapanishad, right? Like that. That explains very nicely how the devotee never thinks that he's the doer. Like that. That's the point being made there. Cruelty means it's not necessary that you have to deal in that way. You're just being cruel. There's no need to do that. Right? So it'd be a milder form of violence, but it's still inappropriate behavior. Cheating, as before, it would be sinful action. It's just you're doing something you shouldn't be doing because you want to get more. You don't want to lose any position, your identity, your facility. Some way you feel there's going to be a loss. Longing for position, because then you think you're special, you're better, because ultimately this comes down to the idea, I'm Guru of Vaishnavas. That's one of the means. It means I'm advanced, I'm Guru of Vaishnavas. These two mentalities, these keep you back in devotional service and at the platform of Bhava. I mean, they'll keep you back before that, but they'll still keep you back at that point. Everything else will go away, those two will remain, right? Because they're still, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, right? Does that make sense? They're just a subtle, like seemingly more devotional form of them, right? Maya's very clever, right? You know, like that. Right, so she gets the yogis by them thinking when they see Paramatma that they are Paramatma. But he gets the devotees by thinking, I'm advanced, or I'm a guru of Vaishnavas. Right? So like this, then she's got her tricks. Greed for money, or material piety. That because money then will mean facility, it'll get position, it will get, you know, want to be able to get things done. So that kind of element, then, it becomes over. It means, it doesn't mean one doesn't endeavor for money. It says greed. Greed for money or piety. You do piety, you get more in the future. Money means you have it right now. Piety means you'll have it in the future. Right? Your potential for getting money now is greater the more your piety. Right? So either of these, then the artha becomes too prominent. Is that okay? So all these things, these creepers must be seen in all their ways and then given up. Then one comes to prema, and compared to this, all these other things that they're connected or branched, you know, how you say the negative aspects of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, then are seen as insignificant. Like that. Okay, anything else? Oh, I guess that's about it on this. You have, I think, 45 seconds. You got a question? No? Yes.
Just when I hear all this, sometimes I think it's a miracle that anybody actually makes any progress.
It's a miracle they make progress. Yes, that is the mystic aspect. Because Krishna's involved, because you mentioned before, the Hladini Shakti protects. That's why it works. Because what you're dealing with here is all the energies. We think it's just the action itself, but it's the energies. Because everything's going on, even an action is because of the energies. You know, the modes of nature. This, so that we're able to advance spiritually or distinguish between matter and spirit. You know, and have that inspiration to be absorbed in the spirit. That's the blessing of the Hladini Shakti. It means Krishna's blessing. Right? Then we're able to do these things. So it is a miracle, but it's the natural position. You know, it's God's creation. It must be something special. Right? He's not ordinary, so therefore how everything works is very special. Our life becomes very ordinary. It means what's going on around us, even the material energy, is special. It's not ordinary. But we become, kind of take it for granted, or become kind of jaded to it. But it's still very special. And this is the, you know, how you say, just a spark of Krishna's splendor. And he's talking about the big stuff. You know, he's not talking about the little dinky stuff. He's talking about the big, big stuff. You know, the Himalayas, you know, as opposed to mountains. I remember as a kid, as you walk through, you know, how you say, foothills. Foothills are a few hundred feet high. But when you go up into you start up in the Himalayas and Nepal, like that, they're thousands of feet high. It looks exactly the same. It was just, you know, 10 times bigger. You know, the same little rolling hills, you know. In the West, I don't know where we were, I think the tree line stops about 12,000 feet. No, actually, I think, yeah, about 12,000 feet. But in the Himalayas, it's about 16,000 feet. You know, so it's just, everything's just bigger. So, you know, he's talking about that kind of thing and that experience of the greatness of the Himalayas as opposed to any other mountain. That is Krishna. But he's saying that's a spark of his splendor. You know, let alone, you know, the little molehill in your backyard or something. And he's saying, so that's even less. But still, there's so much going on that's amazing in the world, how it happens, you know. You know, Krishna was saying, we mentioned the other day, that it's Krishna's mystic power, or potency, that trees eat through their feet. You know? I mean, that's special, right? So, all these different things are there, and how it all goes on. And, you know, like that coquille, it lays its eggs in another bird's nest, and it's the kids grow up, you know, much faster and quicker than the others. And they look similar, and then when they grow up, then they leave. So the other bird is taking care of their kids. But, you know, to make that arrangement, then that's special. Right? Does that make sense? So all these things, there's so much going on in the world, it's amazing. Then that's Krishna's potency. Right? So, and this is the inferior energy. So the spiritual, then, is so much greater. So much greater. Unlimited compared to very insignificant. Rather than 10 times bigger or smaller. Yeah? Okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Dainita Gaura Premanandi.